Two moons orbit the hollow planet of Mystara. One seen and the other unseen. Matera, the one that is seen, whose phases govern the cycles of lycanthropy, and whose surface houses the immortals. These immortals live in a city called Pandias, where they meet and watch over the known world. The second moon, the unseen moon, Patera, or Myoshima to its mysterious inhabitants, is an invisible moon. The heavens of the known world, the ancient writing of Allura Atheri. Welcome back, everybody, to my podcast, Tales of Mystara, a solo Dungeons & Dragons campaign. The rules of the tabletop and the roll of the dice dictate where the story goes, as well as whether a character lives or dies. Nothing is precious, and no one is safe from the roll of the dice. If you've been following this show closely, you'll no doubt have noticed the format change considerably since the fourth episode of this current story, which is the Palace of Evander. And I'm still trying to find the right balance between the kind of podcast I'd like to make versus the kind of game I'd like to play, and of course the pacing I want to achieve. I feel like I haven't got this right yet, and so I'm taking pains to address it, starting with this episode. The first thing I want to do before I dive into what's different is thank everyone who has taken the time to let me know their thoughts on certain matters. And in this episode, I'd like to especially thank Yasuwain for some really constructive feedback, some of which I hope to address moving forward. So back to the drawing board then. What can you expect to be different? Well, firstly, I'm going to attempt to bring back some of the immediacy of the story by placing it in the present and adding some of the previous atmospheric storytelling that I used to do. I still want to relate a personal touch, so I'm looking for more of a blend this time. I'll include some discussion as I narrate the adventure. I'm actually quite excited about this episode because what I'm going to do is hit record and play my game. There's going to be no reporting after the fact. This is going to be me sat at a table with the dice, the rules, the character sheets, maps, setting information and so on. But it's important to recognise that no matter which way I impart my game to you, the characters in the party are completely at the mercy of the dice. This much is universal. Yes, this current adventure is one I wrote, as I explained before, but this does not allow me to control the outcome of the story, and I tend to explain as I go along how this is the case. So, without further ado, let's dive into this new episode of Tales of Mystara. First, I will briefly recap the events so far. Yolanda Vorloy and Ilyena Petraeus, a human fighter and a human rogue respectively, undertook a 21-day journey to deliver news of the death of the magic user Fyodor Ivanos to his homestead. Along the way, they acquired supplies and a mule named Bella. Upon arriving at the homestead, they were warmly received by Cathbad, a magic user and Fyodor's close friend. Cathbad invited them to a small hamlet called Alabast, where they visited a tavern known as the Sleeping Tankard. In the tavern, they encountered a drunken storyteller named Taclin Merryborn, who shared a tale about the Palace of Evander, an abandoned and overgrown palace near the Enchanted Forest. Taclin offered them a reward of 30 gold pieces to explore the palace and uncover its purpose. After deliberation, Ilyena, Yolanda and Cathbad decided to verify the truth of Taclin's story. Ilyena, who sought adventure and honour through the shearing ceremony, joined the expedition. Cathbad, desiring to experience Fyodor's adventurous life, decided to accompany them despite his old injury. The following morning, they set out north with a rough map provided by Taclin. Their journey took them deep into Radleb Woods, and they eventually stumbled upon the dried-up riverbed of Korthas. Crossing an ancient moat bridge, they reached the grand entrance of Evander's palace, a site surrounded by magical woods with encroaching creepers and towering walls adorned with intricate carvings. The party are now on the fourth day of their exploration. It is Lunadane 8, Felmont, AC 1000. And they await nightfall, so they can use a half-moon engraved key to unlock a strange door that leads into a mysterious garden behind the throne. It is only early evening in midsummer, so the moon, known as Matera, will not be casting its strong light for hours yet. Let's pick up some dice and play. All is calm in the large dining hall. Ilyena kneels down to search under the long table. But as she does, she spots something strange, stuck to the underside of a chair. She discovers an ornately carved silver dagger, which she retrieves. Yolanda hears a sudden shuffling at the far end of the dining room. "Who's there?" she commands.
"Please don't hurt me,"
a high-pitched voice responds, panicked. Something, or more accurately, someone, is under the table, after all.
"Show yourself,"
Ilyena demands. The stranger immediately obeys. It's a halfling woman who comes into view, just barely peering across the top of the far end of the long table. An ageless woman with brown bobbed hair and big brown eyes. She swallows hard with a look of fear and uncertainty. Ilyena points her sword towards the woman and speaks.
"Never trust a halfling who's outside the Five Shires," my old training buddy used to say.
"Please, my lady, you don't seem like the cruel type. I beg you, don't hurt me. I'm just minding my business."
"What do you know of this place?" Yolanda interrupts.
"I'm a poor widow with mouths to feed. I just happened upon this place and scavenged a couple of trinkets to put some bread on the table."
"Perhaps you would like to join us for half a share of what we find," Ilyena offers.
"You must be mad,"
Yolanda protests dramatically.
There's a lot of conversation going on here. You might be wondering if I just make it up off the top of my head. The short answer is no. I have a couple of methods that I like to use in solo games. For this game so far, I've been rolling topics of conversation at random. Topics I use in this game are hometown, virtue, vow, vice. These are the three Vs that I use to describe characters' behaviour and keep them consistent. Some other topics relate to story arcs and legends and rumours. There is also a category that triggers the process for luring the NPC into service, which is how Ilyena came to invite this NPC into the party. So the take home from this is that as a player, I don't know what any character is going to say to another or what will come out of the interaction. And apart from making logical deductions, it's pretty much out of my hands. So I'll offer a bit of a warning here. When you start getting into unfolding random conversations and story arcs this way, the story threads in your game can get so tangled up that it becomes very difficult to keep track. The reason I opted to do it this way originally is because I was making a hybrid D&D solo campaign / audio drama.
On my YouTube series, The Castle of the Quest, I do it completely different. I simply have an NPC sheet that contains all the major NPC traits and characteristics, and includes how these characteristics can influence bonuses and penalties to reaction rolls. This is much simpler, and it's really a matter of rolling randomly to uncover NPC traits in order to discover what the NPC is like and how they might behave in certain situations. But with that digression kind of put to one side, let's look at what happens next. So I'm going to roll a reaction roll here to see how this interaction with the halfling turns out. I will allow a bonus for human to halfling race relations. The fact that Ilyena and the halfling are both neutral, and the plus one charisma bonus from Ilyena, who will be doing the negotiating. But there will be a minus two penalty for Yolanda's protest. So altogether, it will be a plus three to the 2d6 roll. And that's a five. So I'm just going to... It's a pretty poor reaction roll. So I'm just going to role play this out now. "How do I know you're not tricking me?" the halfling woman says with a tone of hostility. "I think I'll just take my leave of you and let you go on in peace instead." "Then go in peace," Ilyena says with compassion. "We will not harm you." The halfling takes her leave. "Well, that was a mistake. We could have at least learned something," Yolanda protests. "You can't just take everyone on their word. People lie." "We still have about 4 more hours before dark," Cathbad interrupts to inform the others. "Perhaps we could continue to explore the west side of the palace." The party decide to head through the door at the far west end of the room. Ilyena lifts a finger to hush the party, believing she can hear movements beyond the door. Yolanda presses an ear to listen. And that was a successful hear noise check. The percentile die was a 12. And Yolanda has a 35% chance to hear noise. She hears flapping on the other side. Something like a pigeon trapped in a chimney breast. "Nothing to worry about, just a bird," Yolanda says. "I can hear it squawking. Possibly a parrot." The door opens with ease, and beyond is a room not quite as large as the dining room. Directly opposite the party, in the middle of the east wall, is a stuffed unicorn mounted on display. There is a door on the south wall, and a large golden birdcage sits in the southwestern corner of the room, decorated with electrum filigree. The cage is empty, save for the skeletal remains of an exotic bird. A set of narrow stairs at the north end of the room descends into a narrow tunnel. "Let's spread out and search the room," Yolanda says, and is drawn immediately towards the golden birdcage. Cathbad examines the unicorn. "I'll stand guard in case anything approaches," says Ilyena, as she listens intently for noise. So Ilyena rolls a 2 on the d6, so she can hear a clicking sound. So you might have heard me say this before, when it comes to deciding whether a character will have the sense to listen at a door or listen inside a room, I make a simple roll to see if they are smart enough to work out that it's a good idea. And the roll is a chance in 10 or 20 if you want to increase the difficulty of the game.
The chance in 10 or 20 is 1 plus the character's level plus their intelligence modifier. I only really use this method when playing a pre-written adventure, and that's because you have to review the DM notes in the map key, which will tell you what is in a particular room. So again, it's just taking the choice away so you don't have an unfair advantage. I wouldn't do this if procedurally generating a dungeon on the fly. Instead, I would decide for myself whether the party listens at a door or not. And if they successfully hear sound within, then a monster with or without treasure will be in the room. And it's just a question of trying to gain surprise at that point, or possibly avoiding the encounter altogether. I hit the pause button on the recording before I made this roll, because this is a roll regarding solo mechanics and not necessarily game rules. So I tend to just try and snip them out just for the pacing. But I don't always do that. But in this instance, that's what I did. So I'm going to make a roll now to determine how far away this monster is. So this is a 4d6 roll multiplied by 10. And the result is 160 feet away. So the clicking sound seems quite distant. The sound is coming from somewhere beyond the eastern door. So I'm going to roll initiative now. So the party has initiative. Quiet, something's coming, Ilyena warns. And they each remain silent for the next round to see if the source of the sound comes closer. The sound does draw nearer for a moment, and then nothing. Complete silence. And for your information, the whatever it is that's approaching this monster is now 130 feet away, so it's cut the distance down by 30 feet. And we will now go back to initiative for the next round. This time the monster has the initiative. As the party are being quiet, I will add a +3 bonus to the reaction roll for the monster. And with a 10, the reaction is neutral. So I will rule that the monster doesn't come any closer this round, but remains where it is. I will allow Ilyena and Cathbad to roll against their dexterity in order to stay quiet. But they will suffer a -3 penalty, as they are not trained in stealth as a skill. Yolanda, on the other hand, is trained, so will not suffer a penalty. So she will have a 13 in 20 chance. So Ilyena rolled a 6, which is an easy success. Cathbad a 12 against his meagre dexterity of 8. But the worst roll of all, a 16 against a 13, was Yolanda's. Of all the possible moments for this to happen, why was it this moment that she needed to sneeze so badly and was unable to stifle it? So, to the top of the round, initiative. So the initiative was tied, so simultaneous actions will occur this round. And I will negate any previous bonus to the monster's reaction roll. And with a 2, the monster will definitely attack. So the monster will cut the distance down to 90 feet. And the party can hear a hissing sound from beyond the dining hall coming through the throne room. Perhaps we can still deter it, Ilyena says. Let's put some rations on the table in the dining room.
It's a bit risky, says Yolanda.
Let's push the stuffed unicorn in front of the door.
There isn't time, Cathbad intercedes. The party will try to evade instead.
So this little exchange here was just me trying to figure out the best course of action. Nothing was automated about this interaction. As a player, I was simply exploring my options. So I'm going to make a D6 roll to decide whether the monster will pursue. The monster will pursue. The party have a 25% chance to evade, which is not a lot, really. It's not much of a chance at all. And with a 76 on the percentile die versus 25, they absolutely fail. So we go to initiative. And at least they have the initiative. They won the toss. So the party run to the south door and all three will attempt to open it. So 3d6 roll. So with the aid of Ilyana's high strength score, they just about managed to pull the door open and continue their flight across a 40 by 40 square room with a hearth, cistern and flight of winding stone steps, which they make it about halfway up. This appears to be the southwestern tower. And they hear the monster enter the room they just left. And they pray it does not know which direction they fled. So they again had a 25% chance to evade. And I rolled 29 on the percentile. So I was so close, but they failed again. So back to initiative. And the monster has the initiative. It bursts through the door and catches them on the stairs. A giant gecko clicking and hissing wildly. So the initiative this time is tied. The party form a line standing three abreast on the stairs to melee with the creature. They each get to make an attack. They all miss. This is not good. So I'm going to roll to see randomly what the gecko decides to do. The gecko will try to bite Ilyana. It needs an 18 to hit. And it rolls a natural 20, so that's 1d8 damage. Ilyana has 6 hit points, so there is a 3 in 8 chance here that she will die. And I rolled a 6, so Ilyana is dead. I feared this day would come, but didn't expect it so soon. The remaining members of the party do not have much of a chance to win this fight, so they must think quickly. In the magical phase of combat, Cathbad will use his manoeuvre to use a magic item, the potion of poison. He will take the potion and pour it on his own arm and Yolanda's dagger, then hold his arm out to entice the gecko to bite him. These motions are not very complex, but I will rule a dexterity check must be made to get the poison onto Yolanda's dagger. If he fails, he's not quick enough. I will also rule that a successful wisdom check must be made to entice the creature to bite him, otherwise it will bite a random target. With just 2 hit points, this is a risky move. Yolanda will attack with her dagger and hopefully she will have a chance to kill the creature with poison as well. So here are the rolls. Cathbad rolls a 5 against dexterity, which is a success. And another 5 against his wisdom, also a success. So here's Yolanda's attack with the poison dagger. A natural 1. So that's an automatic miss. The creature bites Cathbad's arm. It must roll 1 damage on the d8, otherwise it's over for Cathbad. A 3, so Cathbad's arm is bitten clean off and he is pulled down the stairs and finished with a final bite to the throat. The creature must now roll a saving throw versus poison, and it needs a 12 to save. A 6. The cold-blooded giant starts to thrash wildly at the foot of the stairs, crashing into the stone walls, bringing down heavy chunks of debris. But after a few moments, it dies. Yolanda is now all alone, and she is mortified by the loss of her friends. She sobs for a long time, until the grief gives way to melancholic apathy. For hope, she pulls out her dagger and cuts a lock of hair from each of her slain companions for safekeeping. Yolanda gathers as many resources as she can carry, including any coinage held by the deceased characters. She also takes the half moon key. She's now a little encumbered, and there is only 4 to 5 hours left until the sun sets. If she leaves now, the chance to see beyond the mysterious door into the strange garden beyond might be gone forever. Yolanda gathers her bearings. The room has a large cistern in the northeast corner and a fireplace on the west wall. She searches the fireplace, but it's just a normal fireplace with no hidden secrets or trinkets. Next, Yolanda checks the cistern. The water, once clean and clear no doubt, is now stagnant and covered with a thick layer of scum. Yolanda picks up Cathbad's cane. "Just borrowing it, my friend," she consoles. She approaches the cistern once again and uses the cane to remove some of the scum from the surface of the water. Hidden away beneath the scum is 900 copper pieces. Too much weight to be worth the retrieval. Yolanda decides to leave it behind. She will go back to the room with the stuffed unicorn and continue to look around. The horn on the stuffed unicorn is not original. Presumably, the mad Evendor may have used it in some strange alchemy. In its place is a decorative horn made from a mixture of precious metals worth about 120 gold pieces. Yolanda takes it. Next, she takes the steps down into a short tunnel which emerges at the top of another short flight of stairs in the base of the northwestern tower. Apart from a small spiral staircase leading up, The ground floor appears empty.
Yolanda, now the sole survivor of a party of three, stands in the northwest tower of the Palace of Evander before a spiral staircase which leads up. The base of the tower is empty. There is nothing but the stairs, or to return the way she came. Yolanda carefully ascends the spiral staircase. Before long, she steps out into the open sky. The woods that surround the palace are so dense, and the trees so tall, that nothing beyond the palace can be seen. But this doesn't seem right at all. Korizeki Keep and Radled Keep should be to the west. The mountains beyond Verge to the north. Riflion to the east. Perhaps some powerful magic is at play in this part of the forest. What can be seen from the southeast corner of the tower, far below, nestled between the jutting buildings of the palace, is the mysterious garden beyond the locked door. A pond is its centrepiece, but the pond's old muse, probably once reflected in its now murky waters, is a large ancient-looking tree, growing and casting emerald shadows amongst the garden. Having this vantage point, it's quite clear that all visible parts of the palace have been explored, save for the garden, so she will wait here a while. Eventually, Yolanda falls into an exhausted slumber, and when she awakes, the half-moon, Matera, shines brightly in the midsummer night sky. It takes her four turns to reach the strange door behind the throne. She takes the heavy iron key with the half moon engraving and inserts it into the lock, which is illuminated by a skylight above. The door, like any mundane one, simply unlocks with a click. Strange. Yolanda almost expected more somehow. She shrugs, opens the door, and crosses the threshold. She makes her way along a narrow tunnel, which after 30 feet or so, emerges into the moonlit garden. At the edge of the pond, a fat toad stares at her. So I'm going to use a simple oracle system here to decide what it is that Yolanda is going to do in this situation. And this is something I've been experimenting with recently, using a deck of playing cards to try and keep it simple as possible. So the way that I work this is I draw a card off the top of the pack after shuffling the deck, and if I draw diamonds, then the action that the character takes will be related to material actions. Hearts equals support actions. Clubs equals offensive or defensive actions, and spades is for magical or intellectual actions. So let's see what the cards have in store. And the answer is spades. So this relates to magical or intellectual actions. So to me, the most obvious interpretation of that is going down the intellectual action route would be to try and converse with the toad in hopes that it is magical, because this is a palace that seems to be quite a fairy tale palace. We've discovered that wishes seem to work here, and the whole place is just absolutely seeped in fairy tale type magic, so the cultural reference here is so obvious.
I have a feeling you're not just a regular toad. And I'm tired. Hungry. I've lost my friends. All for a story. And some treasure. You can have it all back, along with your secrets. I'm done, says Yolanda, much to her own surprise.
So I'm going to roll a straight 2d6 reaction roll, and Yolanda will have no bonuses for charisma, because her charisma is plus zero, but I think I'll allow a plus one for her indifference, because this creature is of neutral alignment. Yolanda is of neutral alignment as well, and she seems to be showing a real apathy, a real kind of sense of indifference. She doesn't care either way at the moment. So that would be an 8 altogether. The toad does not respond. It simply stares at Yolanda.
I must be going crazy, says Yolanda,
with a large dose of self-pity. So I'm going to make another reaction roll with the same plus one. So that's 9 altogether. Once again, the toad just sits there motionless. So I think what would make sense at this point, after Yolanda has attempted to converse with this toad twice now and had no response, it would seem logical that she is starting to believe that this is simply a normal toad and there is nothing magical about it. So what I'm going to do is have Yolanda roll against her intelligence score, and if she fails, then she will give up on the whole idea of the toad being something other than a mundane toad. Yolanda's intelligence is 13, so I need to roll less than 13 on a d20 for her to pass the intelligence roll. And a 2 is definitely a pass. Yolanda notices the way the toad seems to glow in the moonlight, in some undescribable way that just doesn't seem natural to her. There really is something peculiar about this toad.
I hope I don't need to kiss you, she says. But you're definitely not just a toad, are you? I mean no harm. Whatever happened here long ago, I'm not here to cause any damage or interfere.
I think it's fair to say that the effort that she's going through trying to convince this toad that she's not here to cause any damage or interfere in any way should rightfully give her a plus one on the reaction. I think she's made it quite clear that, I mean, she's not of chaotic alignment. She's made it clear that she seems to be more neutral. And she's made it clear that she's not here to cause any havoc. So I'm going to give a plus two to the next reaction roll. So let's see what happens. And we have a 10. The toad transforms into its true form. A small green creature with taloned feet, clawed hands, two large horns on its head, and floppy, bat-like ears. The creature sighs and speaks. What's the point? My master has been gone now, more than a lifetime. It's doubtful he will ever return.
You mean Evandor? Prompts Yolanda.
I am his familiar, The creature continues, sworn to protect the tree. So this creature is now neutral because of the last reaction roll, which was a 10. So the next reaction roll will be subject to a +4 bonus. So this gives Yolanda an opportunity to converse further and perhaps benefit somehow from the conversation. What's so special about the tree? Yolanda asks. So here is a reaction roll with a +4 plus the extra 2, one for neutral alignment and one because Yolanda has, you know, been pretty friendly so far in trying to win this creature over. So that's an 11 altogether. The creature remains neutral. Apathetic, even. It waves a hand dismissively and answers. Special? Nothing. Nothing at all. I've watched it age, as it's watched me. Do what you will. And with that, the creature leaves the garden, never to return. Warm laughter is heard on the breeze, and then a dryad emerges from the tree. I thank you, stranger, for relieving my prison guard from his duties. I am Ara, and I have been trapped in the palace for more than a lifetime, all because I once loved a man. Evander, says Yolanda. Yes, responds the dryad, a human sorcerer, an extraplanar traveller who went missing more than a lifetime ago. When I fell for him, I was still an elf. Now, I am something else, bound to this tree by my own people as punishment for falling in love with Evander. It was me that infused Evander with the magic of sorcery, giving him power which was raw and unpredictable. The magic eventually twisted Evander into a selfish and power-hungry being. As an act of revenge, Evander felled the forest surrounding this tree and built this palace around it so that he could keep me away from my people. If he could not have me, then nobody would claim me. The palace became a prison, walling me inside. The power hungry in Evander's veins drove him to seek a better understanding of its source. He eventually grasped the ability to travel the planes of the multiverse, his journeys into other planes becoming more and more frequent, until eventually he disappeared, never to return. I wish to escape, the dryad continues, to become a guardian of the forest beyond the palace and rejoin my people. The forest is reaching out, growing rapidly closer to the palace. Eventually, there will be trees within the palace walls, which I can use to pass beyond the walls that imprison me here. For now, all I can do is wait. But in the meantime, let me right some of the wrong that Evander has caused. You lost two of your friends. Does any part of them remain? I have a lock of their hair, Yolanda says, and involuntarily passes the trinket to Ara. So, this dryad has access to the 6th level reincarnation spell, and she's offering this as a service to Yolanda. Basically, what this spell does is it creates a new body for a character that is dead. To cast this spell, the magic user must have a part, however small, of a dead body, and the spell magically creates a new body, and the life force which was once in the dead body returns and inhabits the new one. It's up to the DM to choose what sort of body is created, but as we're playing solo, what I'm going to do is refer to some tables to decide, and these tables are given in the rule cyclopedia for the actual spell. So for Cathbad and Ilyana, I'm going to roll a d8, and that will dictate what type of body they are reincarnated in. A result of 1 to 3 is human, 4 is dwarf, 5 elf, 6 halfling, 7 is the original race, which in both their cases is human. And if I roll an 8, then they will be reincarnated into the body of a monster. So I'm going to do a separate roll for each of them. So here is the first roll. So a 3 means that Ilyana will come back human. And a 1 means that Cathbad will also come back as a human. So, some further details about this spell. The victim's level of experience does not change unless restricted by the maximum for demihumans. So, essentially, they will keep the same class, the same race, but they won't be the same body, but their level of experience and all their abilities will remain the same, and they will remember who they used to be. The dryad casts a reincarnation spell on each lock of hair, and two human figures begin to form before Yolanda, who is immediately brought to tears. The dryad turns and vanishes back into the tree. A moment after the dryad vanishes, a piercing scream comes from within the tree, and immediately after, the tree rapidly withers and dies. Evander's final act of revenge has played out. If he could not have his love, then nobody would claim her. A moment later, Ara reappears in a fit of rage and madness. The tree in the garden, to which she was bound, roots her to the world, and now it is destroyed. She will rapidly lose her youthful appearance and descend into insanity. The party must roll initiative. Join me next time to find out what happens next.